nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
So Dr. Nanyao is one of my colleagues here at Princeton University. He's academically a senior research scholar with rank of full professor with continuous appointment. And he's also the director of our Imaging Analysis Center here at Princeton University. And he plays with a lot of those really cool electron microscopes I was showing you in the beginning. Nan is PhD from Arizona State University. He was a postdoctoral fellow at ExxonMobil and also was visiting scientists at Shell, joined Princeton University in 1993, and basically has been from the Imaging Analysis Center and received his academic And that was from a 4.5.
For a very kind introduction. And thank you, Glenn. And the development of it. Everything you will try to problem, but the first thing will be better you see it, right? Then identify. find him, he basically considered as a godfather in electron microscopy, especially transmission electron microscopy. And he really nurtured a lot of students, several generations of modern scientists from his mentoring. Number seven, can extend to any using secondary electrons, we can study the morphology of the material. Backscattered electrons, we can study orientation of the materials. Characteristic X-rays can tell us what kind of elements inside your sample from the region your probe is. And we also can do another half. If incident beam energy is high enough, sample is thin enough, all the signal can penetrate through the sample. That is the foundation of the transmission microscopy, right? For TEM, you're using electrons. So electron transmitted through the sample, get all kinds of signals after the sample. So that's the base of transmission electron microscopy. That's what we try to cover in this short presentation. So if we use a secondary electrons, using these electrons, this give us a surface morphology, right? You basically cannot see through the sample, but the morphology of the sample give you very nice information. For instance, this is one of the early pictures I have. Look at the diatoms. And if you don't look at the scale bar here, you basically think this is a piece of art. Actually, nature created that. And there's a full story behind it, why nature can create such a sophisticated structure. Our human being, the way behind, we have no way to to synthesize this complicated structure. But how about we look at the things through the sample? And here's a typical transmission electron imaging. And at a very high scale, we can see here the scale bar is 5 nanometers. And this is a small platinum particle. And we see through it. Each white spot here represent a column of atoms viewing from our eye into the screen. And this gives us a lot of information, right? What we can see here, crystal orientation, what kind of lattice we have. We also can see the defects. Look at the this dark band here running from left bottom to the right top. And this is a cleaning structure. Because orientation is different, it blocks a certain portion of electrons. That's why appear dark. And as Jim mentioned earlier, this so-called bright field imaging. And also on the edge of this, even particle appear very shining, but through the TEM, only from the TEM, you can see there's a layer of amorphous on the outside of the circle. So about 2 nanometers thick, this is oxide exists, which is extremely important to know this, especially when you study small particles, catalyst particles, that can affect all kinds of chemical properties. How can we achieve those pictures, images? We use transmission electron microscope. So those are microscopes actually I used as a graduate student back in 1980s. You can see here, it's not that shining anymore, but if you open the column up, you can see inside. It's all piece of metals, right? And this is so-called transmission electron microscopy microscope. It's a 100 kilovolt. That means instant electron and shoot through the column, hit your sample with an energy of 100 kilovolt. And the other type is called a STEM. Actually, when people talking about STEM these days, we are very familiar with this name many, many years ago, because this is called a scanning transmission electron microscope. So the beam not only transmitted through the beam sample, but also scan. So that's why we use this STEM terminology. And go back to development of electron microscopy. We have to give the credit, as I mentioned earlier, and Ernst Ruska. So it's about 40 years after discovery of electrons by J.J. Thomas from Cavendish Lab in UK, and he built the first one. And Michael Connell was credited for building the first scanning electron microscope. And his advisor said, well, we can do the same thing, but we focus the beam, control the beam, let it scan, we can form the scanning electron microscope. So the continued development over the last eight decades, make electron microscope a very powerful tool, right? Here is a slide, and I really enjoy because it shows Ernst Ruska got a Nobel Prize, and this is a prize photo. But more important is a statement he made. He said the light microscope opened the first gate to the microcosm. The electron microscope opened the second because you have much better resolution, right? Shorter wavelengths. And he already asked the question for next one or two generation scientists. What will we find opening the third gate? So far, there's no clue, right? Can we see something smaller than inside the atom? Can we see anything inside the electron? We don't know. Nobody knows. But that's a really good question, right? And make our people, our students, to think about it, right? So here's another picture, just enlarged the one I showed earlier, Ernst Ruska and Michael Connell. This is the first transmission electron microscope. Look at those cables here and so on and so forth. And nowadays, what is the status of transmission electron microscope? And that's the one of the scope we have at Princeton. With this microscope, we basically can see bands of single gold atoms. So I call it single and group dance performed by gold atoms. Each bright spots here on the right picture is a single gold atom under electron observation in real time. And the cluster of that is a group of gold atoms. So we did some imaging simulation measuring the distance between gold in this form. They are much larger than the distance in the standard crystal spacing. So that it try to understand what is the maximum distance between two atoms before they fall apart. And those kind of information could be interest for us to know through this high powerful technique. Now let's talk about transmission electron microscope. And we always want to connect the new thing with stuff we already know. what we are familiar with from the very beginning is optical microscope, which on the left of this slide, you can see here there are major components. You have sample, you have a light source, right? You have a lens, right? And the lens before the sample, between sample and light source, we normally call the condenser lens. And some microscope, you have another set of lens between your sample and your eye, and that's called the objective lens, right? We use this terminology through all different microscopes, light microscope, ion microscope, X-ray microscope, and electron microscope. So with a similar design, and we look at the scanning electron microscope here, right? Instead of visible light, we use an electron gun to emit electrons. And then we have a condenser lens. Basically, it's a set of magnetic coil and to manipulate an electron beam. We know that electron is a charged particles and the magnetic field can change it through so-called Lorentz force. We'll give you a formula that try to refresh. And then heating on the sample, you create secondary electrons collect by this detector and display it on the computer monitor. So this is a gun lens sample. How about the transmission electron microscope? Basically, transmission electron microscope utilize a SEM column, right? But different is taller. And you also have a lenses below the sample, which SEM doesn't have. And to collect transmitted electrons and go through a column and hitting on the screen, you can observe it. So with this, we have a pretty clear idea how the electron microscope works compared with optical microscope. We use a similar terminology. Only difference here is we use electron instead of light. We're using magnetic field instead of glass lens, right, in the optical microscope. And when we deal with electron microscope, and we want to know what is the key components, right? And if you open the microscope, there are thousands and thousands of small pieces. It's a very nice, complicated system. But we can divide them to a few components, which is critical. One is the electron gun, which is responsible to emit electrons, high-density electrons, and pure energy electrons and small probe size of electrons. That's normally what we need. Then we have a lens, and how can we manipulate electrons, not distort them and not add artifacts? That's the beauty of lens. Among all the lenses, the most important one is the objective lens, the one right below the sample. And we worry about how strong they are and how small the aberration coefficient is. Third one is a goniometer, which provide flexibility of your sample and the stability. And you can do all kinds of things, right, during the observation. That's where the in situ microscopy come to the picture. So besides all this, of course, we need a very good vacuum system. And for a high-end electron microscope, you want a sample surface as clean as possible, not contaminate by carbon monoxide or so on and so forth. You need a good vacuum, but we don't have time to talk about that. But just keeping in mind, most of transmission electron microscope has to be operated under high vacuum. High vacuum, we mean normally above 10 to minus 7 top. Yeah. All right, now let's talk about electron gun. This is a simplified diagram showing how electron gun works. Get it easily. But you need a high quality for that. That's lab six. But the electron microscope require field emission gun. That give you much better and just like a light, and you have a band of wavelengths, right? If the light goes through the prism, and color will be displayed. So that means you can disperse them. So you go through the same lens, different wavelengths will be banded differently. So that's why you need a unique light like a laser, only one wavelength. Same for electrons. If all electrons have the same energy, they go through the magnetic field, they can be act with the same force. They can be bent at the same angle. But if you have a different energy, and then they just like have different wavelengths of light, and they will go through the prism. So that's not good. Now we talk about the electron lens. And the electron lens basically is a bunch of magnetic field, right? And how can we generate a magnetic field inside the microscope? How can we overcome the aberration? Aberration is more critical in electron microscopy than optical microscope. I always talk about that. And among the aberration we try to correct is most critical one is a spherical aberration and then chromatic aberration, astigmatism. That is minor, only important to deal with at a high magnification. So how the magnetic lens work? We utilize the principle of Lorentz force, right? So if we have a closed coil here, you shoot the electron in, and then the current goes through the coil will affect this, right? If we refresh our high school physics, if there's any change in electron current, then there's a field change. And if there's any magnetic field change can generate a current change, right? So that's why, and people utilize this principle to build a device to manipulate electrons. And we can see the Lorentz force here, formula, right? F equals electron charge, velocity, and cross B. Basically, they follow the left-hand rule, F, V, and B, in perpendicular to each other in three different directions. So when we design the lens, we have to keep this in mind. Electron actually does not travel in the straight line, but it's travel inside the microscope like a spiral. So this is you can build magnetic lens, a bunch of coils of those wire I just mentioned, and then you open a small gap here. The field is concentrated, right? And so by changing the current here, you can change the field. That's what you do to manipulate the electron beams. And like later image showing by Glenn, I see that you can make the electron beam size small and big. So that means you can play the lens like this and make electron beam focus higher or lower. That changes the final landing beam size of your sample. When you play with this, you can make the different trajectory of the field and of the force. if the electron travel inside the microscope, not on the straight line, but on the spiral way, how can you use terminology of geometrical optics, right? Light optics. Actually, we can do that because we can use a plan and keep changing the angle, follow this rule, but within this plan, electrons still travel as a straight line, right? So you rotate, but the electron travel inside this plan always a straight line. If you combine them, it's a spiral, right? So that's the way people deal with electron optics, still can utilize a lot of theory and develop in the optics. Here's a cross-section diagram of transmission electron microscope. Again, electron gun on the top, this acceleration coil, you can add different voltage. You can extract electron from your gun, have a few kilovolt, and then you can X-ray them. Normally for transmission microscope nowadays, you use 100 kilovolt, 200 kilovolt, 300 kilovolt. Old days, people even X-ray this to 1 millivolt. There are a few this kind of microscope around the world in 1980s, 1990s, because the higher the voltage, the shorter the electron wavelengths. They will think we'll give you better resolution. But the payoff is, the drawback is too big, right? It costs you too much, and scope costs you $50 million a piece. And then to maintain it, you need a three-story tall building and lab to hold it. So didn't work out. And so that's why only national lab like Argonne principles. We add another layer opposite way. So eventually they will be symmetric. So that's why people say quadruple pole.